Welcome to another episode of the Victor Alumni Podcast. I'm your host, Bob Dresting, and today I'm joined by Jenner Davis. Together, we made the trip to the beautiful Hudson region of New York State to interview a very special guest. Today's guest was a senior high school principal from 1975 to 1990. He had several children who also attended Victor. He is going to be turning 90 years old on November 15th, and he is also a veteran of the U.S. Navy. If you went to Victor during the 70s and 80s, you already know who I'm talking about. If you don't, you're about to meet an instrumental figure in the culture that defines VCS. I can be talking about none other than Dr. William Giuffre. Dr. Giuffre, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for allowing us this opportunity to visit with you today. Tell us about your recent 90th birthday celebration this past weekend.
Well, as many of you know, we have a large family.
6 daughters and 1 son.
20-some grandchildren. I don't know how many great-grandchildren. But they all showed up for the party. And we had a whooping party. Really did. I saw pictures of myself I never saw before. And my daughter Mary put them all on cardboard. I'll start off by saying that was a major event in my life. My wife turned 90 before me. She was not a cougar. I found her. And at that time, I said, I'm going to marry you. And I had only met her.
Yeah.
But she was such a beautiful woman and such a... She was a year ahead of me in college at the University of Rochester. I was a Navy midshipman, and she was in a nursing school.
Yep.
And she really just caught me. I just... absolutely fell in love with her.
Where and was she from?
She was from Brighton.
Okay, local. Brighton,
local girl, yeah. And she was a cheerleader. And I thought she was probably the most beautiful girl I'd ever seen. And she still is. She's 90. The poor gal now has to take care of me a lot because I have neuropathy, which keeps me slowed down. My feet don't work anymore. And Anne does everything, bless her. So I'll start with that.
She's awesome.
She's been the love of my life and stays that way. So,
at 90, that's awesome.
At 90, yeah. We just celebrated her birthday, same way, at a party that didn't stop.
Victor style.
It didn't stop. I don't drink anymore. Gave that up because it was good for my soul to do that.
Yep.
But I think that was a common thing in my generation.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of drinking, some of which I will share with you as I talk to you today, and I'll tell you how I gave that up too.
So, go way back here. I think Jenner and I were talking on the way down. It's like we always knew you as a principal. We never was like, where did this guy grow up? Where did he come from? How did he arrive here? And it's like. Give us a little synopsis of, where you, I know it's Virginia, but talk about your, where you grew up, how you came to the U of R and, how your whole journey to ended up Principal Victor.
Actually, I was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
And we were there during World War II, and my father was in the military for the Second World War, and he was gone for a long time. He was in the Battle of the Bulge, and... he was a major in the First Army. He was a model for me and my brother Joe. My brother Joe and I are very, very close. We were the oldest two in the family. And we moved to Virginia because after the war, my father came home. He had to take over the family business, which happened to be a Budweiser distributorship, which is what I... referring to a little bit.
Yeah, right.
I gave up alcohol, finally, mostly because I loved my wife enough to recognize that if I kept on drinking beer, I'd weigh 400 pounds,
yeah,
which I didn't need to do. So that plus the moral problem of that. So, and that's some of it. So we went from to Virginia. And both my brother Joe and I thought we wanted to be priests. So we went to St. Charles Borromeo Seminary in Baltimore and started our studies.
Were you like 18 at this time? Or?
No, we were out of grade school.
Okay.
This was a high school. And we both studied there for three years or four, something like that. And then I left there and went to Falls Church High School, which is a very good school district.
After Falls Church, you headed to U of, what made you choose U of R as a,
Joe and I both had been in the seminary, and we both left the seminary at the same time, and we went to public school, high school, for the first time. And I took the Navy scholarship exam, and Joe took it also.
Yeah.
I had a equal score to him, but he didn't. He was older than I was, so I won the scholarship to the U of R, full scholarship.
Like ROTC, right?
ROTC.
Wow.
Everything paid for at the U of R, which, if you know anything about the U of R,
even back then, it was probably the most expensive school. Yeah.
Considerable scholarship. And Anne had gone to the U of R nursing school, and she was there.
What did you study when you went to U of R? What was your...
I thought I wanted to be a physics teacher. I knew I wanted to be a teacher for some reason.
Yeah.
And I did. And I thought I wanted to be a physics teacher until I took my first exam in physics. And then I learned very quickly. I'm a quick learner.
Yeah.
I learned very quickly. No, physics is not for you. So I went to my second love, which was English.
Right.
And I majored in English and education. And that's how I started the path right there at the U of R.
And coming out of U of R, your first job out of U of R was?
U.S. Navy. U.S. Navy.
Yep.
Because
that was part of the ROTC, right? You had to, like, what was it, three years? Or
I think it was 3 years active and 5 years inactive duty in the Navy. And
what did you do in the Navy? What was your...
Oh, I did almost everything in the Navy. I was technically assigned to a large ship,
yep,
the Capricornus. And my wife and I were married right out of college because we had to wait till I graduated before we could get married according to the terms of the contract I had for its
right,
scholarship.
Right.
So that was... And right after we were married, I got assigned to the ship, and that ship left for the Caribbean.
Yep.
On a tour of the Caribbean, and I left Anne staying here after we were married. But that was one of the toughest things in my life, was leaving her at shore when we were first married.
Now I did my homework. Were you into like cryptography and stuff like that in the Navy? And
I was the
electronic.
I was an officer of the deck, underway, which means you were in control of the ship.
Yep.
I was a publications officer of classified material. I had what was known as a top secret,
yep,
cryptographic
clearance,
which meant I had I was in charge of the destruction of all the publications that were codes,
right,
which we did every month. We burned them, and I was responsible for that. I was also the public relations officer for the ship. I was the chaplain aboard ship. I earned my name of Monsignor Giffray, and I had to lead services every Sunday for those who wanted to come. I was also a waveguide officer. In other words, I was responsible for leading the small vessels. And those would be the LCMs, the little boats.
Yep.
Lead waves of those in for an invasion. Thank God I never had to go on an invasion. And I served board that ship until I got out. And I think I was there for 3 years. Then I went into 5 years of
inactive or...
Thank you, yeah, yeah. Inactive duty. And because we had so many children, I qualified for financial help as an officer retired. And that was godsend.
Yep.
So I never paid a cent for my education all the way up through my doctorate.
Wow.
And then I went back to the U of R.
So you, after this, you went back, after the Navy, went back to the U of R to get a doctorate.
Right. It was either that or go into the beer business. And my brother Joe was already assigned to that. My dad had come back home after the war. And he died young. And my mother took over the beer business briefly. And then Joe stepped in. And I could have stepped into that too. But my relationship with Joe was just too close to having him as my boss.
Right.
Because he would have been a good boss. But he would have been, everything would have been absolutely his way.
Yeah.
He's still that way.
Yeah.
Which, God bless him.
So what, you came back to the U of R, got your doctorate, and then what was like the first job that you had, or where did you go first? Like what school district, or when you get, when after your doctorate, what was the first school district that you worked at?
Brighton.
What'd you do there?
I did my student teaching there. And then I started teaching at the junior high school as an English teacher. I went from being a teacher of English to junior high school kids to a guidance counselor. I began to realize that things weren't all perfect in education. And the only way you could really change it is if you moved up in the rank.
Right.
And I...
See, this is stuff that if people at Victor, like I said, didn't know about you. I guarantee they don't know. It's like, personally, myself, you're just the principal. You were born here. This is what you've always done.
Yeah.
But this is great information. I never knew that you were in the Navy. And, you know, I didn't know you went to U of R, any of that stuff. And
one of the things I remember about the Navy was that as officer of the deck in the Navy means that you have full command of the ship when you're officer of the deck underway. And we had a officer who was the executive officer of the ship, who had been a Navy flyboy, and then he got assigned to our ship as the executive officer.
Mm-hmm.
I had to tell him to leave the deck one time because he kept talking to me. And we were in a maneuvering situation where we were, as a whole fleet of ships, moving on command, all ships at the same time, making coordinated exercises. So I had to ask him to leave the deck. That gave me more pleasure than most things. He left.
Did it start with like, get out of my face?
I didn't say it that way. I was polite. I was courteous.
Yeah.
I followed military decor. I had a fabulous chief petty officer who was my assistant in the office, Chief Palava, great guy. And the guy who was my work with me on the deck was Chief Petty Officer. And I became his godfather.
Oh, wow.
That was one of the greatest honors of my life. Fabulous man. And I remember Joe Palava's name, who was the guy who worked with me in the office. We did publications. We did all the paperwork. I was involved in writing a yearbook for the ship when we went to the Med. We adopted an Italian girl, little girl, and gave a big party for her.
Yeah.
And then I did a cruise book about that. And that's the kind of stuff. So mixed things you did. A lot of different things.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just one dimensional.
No, the best part was being away from my wife.
Right. On top of everything you had to do.
Well, one of the reasons I got out of the Navy was so many of the men took their took their wedding rings off.
Right.
And you know, the girls were up to grab. And I couldn't do that.
Yep.
So.
So, one of my questions is what inspired, and you kind of answered this a little bit. I heard it in one of your prior answers there, you know, what inspired you to become a principal? Why is it you were like, you know, I want to be a principal. And like you said, part of it was like to affect any change, you had to be
up a little bit in the rank.
Right. If you were just a teacher, it was very hard to, right?
Right. So. Well, a teacher upon teacher, you might have a personal influence. But there were occasions when I knew this would happen. If I weren't a principal, I couldn't just step in and say,
yep.
You know, what you're doing is not right. This is not good for the kids, blah, blah, blah. I think that would be offensive to a fellow teacher.
Right.
So I didn't do that. But when I made principal, or I had some influence on as a counselor.
Yeah.
Teachers would come to me. And I was a good counselor. I was kind of a directive counselor.
Right.
Which I think I...
Is the best.
Yeah. Well, the other kind of counselors were called non-directive. And I thought to myself, hell, oh, that's not a good thing, being non-directive. If you're non-directive, you're not going in anyway.
Right.
And you're just round in circles. So that's...
Kind of drifting. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you took over for... We talked about this a little earlier before we started, but you took over for Carl Palumbo. How long had he been there? A long time, right?
He'd been there a long time. And he was rightly made superintendent of schools.
So when he left the principal, he went on to become superintendent.
Right. And then when I applied, Carl knew me personally. We went to the same church and things like that. So I had known Carl, and he wanted George Miller, who was a former football coach at Victor, and he was an outstanding math teacher.
I had him for a football coach. I mean, when I was there, he was vice principal under you, but yeah.
Yeah, and he was great. He was a good man. The board wanted George Miller to be, Carl wanted George Miller to become the principal, and the Board of Education wanted me to be.
Right.
Now, one of the humorous things about the Board of Education was one of the questions they asked me.
Is this on your interview?
This is part of my interview.
Yeah.
I showed up for my interview, and of course, interviews are very important for a district because they weed out a lot of weeds.
Yeah, that's the whole whole idea, right?
As I had mentioned earlier, that my father, when he came back from the war, took over the family Budweiser business, and I happened to have a beer can nailed to my mailbox door that dropped down in Victor.
Oh, really?
And a Budweiser can nailed from the bottom up. And I was asked about that by the Board of Education. They said, Mr. Jaffray, tell me about the beer can you have on your mailbox. I said, well, have you ever opened my mailbox? No. I said, well, inside the mailbox, I have a statue of the Blessed Virgin. Now, what's wrong with that?
Right, right. What
they were.
That kind of took them aback,
were just,
right?
And of course, I'm just fooling around at that point. I kind of figured I wasn't going to get the job.
We're going to have some fun with them, right?
Yeah, and we did. And they said that, and they laughed. And then I knew I had the job.
So who was the vice principal when you first got there? Who was the vice principal?
The vice principal was...
I feel like Sullivan.
Sullivan, Jim Sullivan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I had worked with Jim in Rush Henrietta.
Okay.
And I didn't hire Jim. That was, he was hired by Carl as the vice principal. And then Jim left education. He had a tough job doing
right.
for him. Kids did not accept him. And no matter what you do, if the kids don't really grab a hold of you and listen to you,
This kind of really ties into my next question because it's like, how would you describe your approach to being a principal, to being the principal of Victor? How would your style, if it was the Giuffre style was, describe it.
I wish I had my retirement video because I described that pretty well there, and I haven't seen that in a long time. I believed very strongly that the most important person in the school was not the principal. It was not the guidance counselor. It was not the teachers. It was the student.
Yep.
The students were the most important part of the school. None of us, the others like myself, were there for any other reason but to make the make the students
yep.
better people and learn stuff. And that's how I operated. I often hugged people. I didn't hesitate. I could see a football player who was hurting from.
Yep.
And I'd put my arms around him and give him a hug and say, come on in for a cup of coffee and a donut.
Yeah.
And I had kids stopping in my office all the time.
I was going to say, it's like, you know, in my time there, because I was there during your time, and it was like, you were the type of person that, you didn't want to get called into the principal's office because you were afraid of what he'd do to you. It was because you didn't want to, you had this rapport with people that didn't want to let you down. You know, if you got to call it in there, you just feel so bad. It's like, oh no, I can't let Mr. Giuffre down. I can't end up in that office. It just can't happen. And I think that's where you really had an approach that was like, it wasn't my way or the highway. It was like, you know, we're all in this together and, you know, we're all one. And that's the thing about Victor. And I think it still exists today is that Victor is like one big family. And a lot of it too is just the fact that the whole campus is all right there. You know, my kids went to Penfield. You know, these kids are going to all different schools. And then by the time they get to be seniors, they all kind of amalgamate up in the senior high school. But Victor, everybody knew everybody coming all the way up. And when we got there, it was like you were kind of like this father figure. Would you agree, Jenna?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was somebody you did not want to let down. You knew they weren't playing around, but you just had a lot of respect. And it went both ways. I mean, you had a lot of respect for the students, too.
Yeah.
So, but anything else you want to say about your approach and like?
Well, there were kids in the school who would come into my office because they needed a hug.
Yep.
Literally, and that sounds awful sexy, but it wasn't that way at all, and the kids never saw it that way. But I remember one. I can't remember the girl's name now, but she was in often to see me. And she was a kid I knew through the counseling. And she would just come in and say, I think you need a hug.
Right.
And I would accept it, say, let's not get too serious, thank you. And that would be it. But I couldn't do that today. And there's
right.
no way.
No way.
No way you could do that. I couldn't get away with it.
What were some of the challenges of being the principal of Victor? I mean, what were like some of the hard things? Oh, geez,
The biggest challenge really was making sure I didn't treat my kids with deference, my own kids.
Your own kids.
Because they were all there except for my oldest girl. She was at Mercy High School. And that was difficult. And I had to, at one point, suspend one of my kids and who would go unnamed because I didn't want to embarrass her.
Her, so we can eliminate one. We can eliminate Billy on this one.
And Billy was known as Wild Bill already, so he wasn't the one.
He wasn't the one, so
and,
got a few more to choose, a lot more to choose from, actually.
And one of the funniest things I ever had happen to me was I suspended her because she took my keys without permission and went into the school and looked over a prepared exam that she was going to be taking an exam.
Right.
She brought one of her friends as a co-break in her. I did not give her my keys. She took them.
Right.
Now, I would not hesitate to give them my keys if they wanted to go up and play basketball or stuff like that.
Right.
So they did have some advantages that they had as being kids of the principal. And but they were good.
How did you find out? I mean, how did she get caught?
The teacher was a very bright teacher, and he recognized all her answers.
Were like right on point.
All other kids' answers were 100% on key. And he said, nobody could do that. And I think that was Mr. Thompson.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Turned him in. So I suspended.
Oh.
And nope, see how I gave it away.
Gave it away.
you can leave that in there. Take it out. But,
yeah, I don't know, like, you may be the only principal in America that has suspended their own kid. I would bet there's less than three. Let's say at least less than three. I mean,
The funny part of that was Larry McNally, who was a very popular teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Came in with tears in his eyes, and he hugged me, and he says, Bill, I can't believe you suspended your own kid. I said, Larry, if your kid had done that, he'd have been suspended.
Yeah.
No problem. So that was a memory I have.
I just look back at, you know, some of the, I mean, Victor at the time was a really good school. I mean, the type of mischief, if you will, was you know, pretty tame compared to what we see today. And I, you know, it's like every once in a while someone would do a lawn job.
Right.
Somebody would break in and go swim. My friends broke in and went swimming. Do you remember those guys?
You told me one of the big problems of Victor, for, I think, with everybody in there was the smoking.
Right.
And I just walked the halls and I'd see smoke going out of John's. And one time I was walking into the boys' John, and some guy stood in my way. And before I realized it, I had punched him in the gut.
Mistake.
And I said to him, don't ever stand in my way when I'm trying to get into the bathroom. You never know why I'm going in.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm sorry, Mr. D, I'm sorry. Then the funnier one was, so, what does a principal do when he has girls at school? Do you walk into the bathroom on a girl?
Right.
Yes, if they don't listen to me. My responsibility was to keep the rules. And I saw smoke coming out of a girl's room, and I knocked on the door, and I said, put the smoke cigarettes out and come out of there now. And there was no answer. I said, I am going to come in there. I don't care what you're doing. I'm coming in there if you don't take through. And the girl will probably remember this, but she had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
She was sitting on a stall, smoke pouring over her head.
Right.
And she looks up at me when I open the door. Oh, Mr. G, how you doing, Mr. G? Everything okay? I said, it will be as soon as you put that dumb cigarette out. So those are two incidents that I remember vividly. And she was a sweetheart, but she just got me laughing. You know, but the kids have to know I would walk out of those kinds of experiences, and I would chuckle because they're funny for yourself.
Yeah, it was pretty much harmless. I mean, it was nothing like I say, like some of the stuff you see today. It's, you know, that was back in the day. That was big stuff though for
us. Was.
What were some of the memorable moments you had during your tenure? Like maybe just funny, rewarding, you know, really hard. Like when you look back, it's like, oh, I remember this one day. Oh man. Or, you know, is there anything that sticks out? Like that was just like, I mean, you've shared some of the funny stuff, but you know, it's just like a really hard thing. Like, oh, I'm going to have to suspend this kid. And it's whatever it was. I mean, was there any of that?
Normally if there's something very serious, if a law was broken, I always involved the police.
Yeah.
I would not deal with a police matter.
I can remember a few of those times.
Yeah, I would call the state police because they didn't have any kids in the school. So
right.
they would make pretty good decisions, and they handled the kids pretty
right.
well. So those were difficult times.
Yeah.
Because I hated to see kids get in trouble.
I can remember a few times when it was always the state police. All of a sudden, you know, state police would pull up in front there, and the cafeteria was right there, and they'd come, it's like, uh-oh, you know, and they'd be walking somebody out, you know, and you'd be right there by them. Like, so, How about, who are some of the other administrators, teachers, or whatever? Do you keep in touch with a lot of them? Or who are some of the ones that, you know, you remember, like, you know, from your time there?
Well, the one I've been in most contact with is Marlene Smith. And she was the person I hired to call when people, when teachers called in sick.
Yep.
Marlene would take care of calling me and letting me know that they needed to have a substitute. And she would call substitutes for me.
Sure.
And she has stayed.
Mrs. Saxby.
And Mrs. Saxby was there, and Carol Kalari. So I would remember mostly the people that worked for me.
Okay.
Carol Kalari was marvelous when I was working on my doctorate, because she helped by typing. I couldn't type.
Yeah.
And she would type my pages for my dissertation, and
I remember that we had to like actually type. I took a typing class with Mr. Santoro,
and I never had. And without her help, I never would have gone through. I can't remember the name of the young fella who was into computers, and I wasn't. And computers to me were just a fog.
Yeah,
and he set my dissertation up so it could be read by computer, and he was marvelous.
Yeah.
So those were people I remember. Marlene still contacts me faithfully every birthday, and I contact her whenever I think she needs some lifting up. And she's a great gal.
Well, I can tell you this: you are, you know, everybody knows you and remembers you. You don't have to go farther than, I just looked you up on Facebook. Not that I get on that a lot, but I looked you up. You got well over 1,000 followers. So it's like,
you're kidding me.
No, I check it out. You have, you know, and it's people like, I will see, you know, I'll be out with people and they'll be like, you know, Victor people, you know, I remember Mr. Jeffrey. Yeah. I remember, you know, it's just like, you had a huge impact on people. To this day, you know, like I say, there's a lot of people that still will bring up memories of, you know, something
nice,
that happened.
Nice to know.
Let's talk a little bit about post-Victor activities. So I know that after you were done being the principal, which was 1990, around there, you then went on the school board, right? Or the Board of Education?
Board of Education.
How long did you do that?
Several years. And then I decided my wife and I wanted to travel, so I decided not to rerun for the board.
Year is this, like 95, 6?
I couldn't honestly tell you. You know, when you get old like I am, those things, they all blend into a blur.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you that. But we went, Ann and I traveled a lot, and one of the best things we ever did, We vacationed on Kiowa Island one time, and I fell in love with it.
Wouldn't. I played golf there. It's ended up unbelievable.
Buying a condo.
Yeah.
We bought a condo down there, and when we decided to sell it, the price had gone up so high
right.
that we made a tremendous profit on the condo, and then we took the money from the sale,
yep.
invested it, and then was able to rent on Kiowa until we decided to come back home to be near kids.
Yep.
And that's what we did.
That's
so
awesome.
We had a fabulous, fabulous retirement. And basically it was paid for by the condo we had bought.
Right, yeah, perfect.
So it was good.
Did you live, somewhere I read that you lived like up in the Adirondacks too, in inland?
We've been there for years. We've been there 50 some years. We have a summer home there.
Is it right in Inlet?
It's right on Fourth Lake.
Okay. So I know, like, you know, we did a podcast with Tom Turner.
Yeah.
He's from up there, like around Limekiln. He's up in that area too. And
remember Tom?
I don't know. Remember the Hurlbutts?
Oh yeah.
When I was in high school, we would go up there every year to the Hurlbutts. They had owned all these little camps and they rented them out. Right. On Limekiln Lake, and, you know, Jerry Stryker, bunch of us, Kevin Beats, and we'd all go up there and rent all these places out. It was an absolute riot. I mean, great place up there.
Yeah.
So yeah. We're in the town of, is it Windsor?
We're in the town of
New Emma. Windsor. New Windsor here. How long have you lived here?
6 years.
6 years?
And this is a home that's owned by my daughter and her husband, and we rent it.
Yep.
And it keeps us close to the kids here.
Yep.
And all our kids are in this area. Not in the same way. But like, for example, Mary is not too far away. We moved here because we thought we were both getting older. Ian and I were both getting older. And we better be near our kids.
Sure.
Because when you get this age, you
know. No, it's a perfect idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the parts I really want to talk about too is your book writing. How many books have you published so far?
Six published.
And the genre's all children's books, right?
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit, about how it came to be and what the books are about and things like that.
Well, that was a labor of love, but it kept me occupied. And the reason I liked it so much was it brought me into contact with kids again.
Right.
And it started when Beth, my second oldest daughter, said, Anne was always losing her glasses, my wife.
Yeah.
And she would say, honey, have you seen my glasses? And you would get that over and over and over again. Well, you can hear that just so much than before you have to hold your tongue or lose your wife one the other. I said, no, I have not seen your glasses. Where'd you leave them? And Beth said, Dad, why don't you write a book about that? So that came, the first book, which was Grandma's Glasses.
Oh.
And I used the names of all my grandchildren.
Right.
That were alive at that point as those who helped me find their glasses.
Right.
Or helped her find their glasses. And that's how I started. And that book went over so well.
Was it in like bookstores or how?
It was. I found a publisher who would publish it. Publishing a book is difficult. Nobody knows you. You have to. If you're a famous person,
sure.
You know, like, you know, Hillary Clinton read a book and she.
Right.
Everybody loves the village.
They fight over it. Yeah. Yeah, we want it.
So.
Did you do any book signings for some?
I did tons of book signings. They were always fun, and I've done a lot of book sales with all my books, and one of my daughters has been very good with going with me to put the books out, and we still have signings. So,
if somebody out there wanted to get some of these books, I mean, would like a place like Amazon have them, or if you went on to Amazon?
No, I decided that was too much of an effort at getting old. I still have some books, but I'm not active in selling them. But if anybody wanted to really get a set of the books, they would just have to get a hold of me on email and say, how's chances of getting some books? Mm. And then they could pay for them. But
careful what you wish for, because it's probably a lot.
Yeah.
What are the books? What are they like? What age are they geared toward?
They're for first readers. And their Grandma's Glasses was the first one. Eddie the Elf would be Elvis. Two Christmas books. And they're probably the most literary of my books.
Right.
One about the first gift of Christmas, which tells of Christ's child needing a blanket.
Yep.
And sees the virgin come and look for a place to stay. And he gives Mary his blanket that his grandmother had made him. And that becomes the first gift of Christmas. And it ends up as being the first gift of Easter.
Yeah.
And it's a good story.
Yeah.
Then the Anxious Osprey, about an osprey who wants to get out of the nest, lives on Kiowa, but doesn't want to leave because he has a good there, and his mother and father feed him all the time. And they finally decide, look, Oscar, there's lots of good food for you to eat. You're going to have to get it on your own. And it's a lesson.
Yeah, they all have a lesson in them. Yeah, it's awesome.
What else is there? Eddie the Elf, who would be Elvis. And that's just a fun book about Eddie, who wants to be Elvis Presley impersonator.
Right.
And he becomes one. And he wins a prize.
What characteristics, qualities do you think make for a good principal?
Well, first of all, I think most important, essential for a principal is to know himself. Know who you are, know who you aren't, and don't think you have all the answers, because you don't. So be humble. The second characteristic is don't be afraid to love the kids.
Yeah.
They need it. They want it. They thank you for it by showing you love. And that's not such a bad thing to have.
That applies to life.
Yeah, it does. Know who you are.
Do you think principals today face a whole different set of challenges than when you were a Victor? Or do you think it's about the same, or is it different?
No, I think it's very different. I think there's been a lot going on in our society that...
just the whole social media.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest challenges is the electronic stuff. You know, the cell phones and the
stuff. Facebook and all the...
all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I would find that very difficult to deal with. Yeah.
It's such a tsunami of it, too, that it's almost tough to even put up some type of defense against it.
Right.
And
that means that you've got to have... You got to be recognized. If you want to deal with that stuff, you got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't let it run your life. You have to be in control of your school, and you not let your school be controlled by the outside forces.
Right.
So,
when was the last time you were at Victor? I mean, when was the last time you were up by the school and like?
Well, it's been recently, because every time we come by the throughway, there we go out, get off, and
take a little swing through the.
Yeah, still stop at our house and try to say hello to the people who bought it, because a lot of our members are there.
Which I was telling you earlier, as a good friend of mine bought it and raised his kids. They all went to Victor and absolutely, like, you know,
they have handled the house beautifully, and we still have the pond.
Yeah,
they're out back, and I had filled that pond with koi.
Okay,
they were beautiful, but they reproduced. They were supposed to have been sterile koi, but they weren't. And they reproduced. So I used to fish in that pond all the time. And we put in rainbow trout, brook trout, bass. It was a great fishing pond.
That pond's still there. Probably still there. It's still there.
So, but we went by the high school a couple of times. We just drive around the campus. But there's such a buildup in Victor. It's way too crowded at this point.
It's very crowded. I mean, I go to football games up there, and it's still the same. You know, it's Victor. You know you're a Victor, but it's just on a huge scale. It's like, you know, a college football game now.
Well, it has a reputation as being an outstanding educational place, and that's why people come to Victor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. And, you know, they've had some great teachers there. And most of them probably are gone or something. I don't go back to Victor for
reunions.
Reunions, no, I don't. I just can't anymore physically. But that doesn't mean I don't remember them.
Right. What do you think your biggest accomplishment was at Victor?
When I first came to Victor, the BOCES kids were looked down on. They were literally looked down on. If you were a BOCES kid and had to go to BOCES, you were one of the dum-dums. That's the way many people saw him. So I started a program that was a focus on BOCES. And they had a special day where they presented what they were studying.
Right.
And they presented it to the classes, and then we had a luncheon, which they would prepare, and that became a very successful program, and the BOCES kids felt like they were respected, and I was very proud of that. Then I was proud of the fact that I was able to bring to Victor some very good people, like Bob Berkey, mm-hmm. who was a comedian, and I remember he one time had a teacher up on stage, and he was talking about how men normally don't pay attention to their socks. See, they often put on different socks, and he has Leon Robinson.
Oh, I remember Leon Robinson.
Great teacher.
Oh,
had to lift up his pants leg, yeah. And sure enough, there were two mismatched socks, and everybody roared.
Yeah.
And one of the toughest things to deal with was the death that occurred in Victor.
Yep.
Under Mike Amir. I remember one of the young girls died. I can't remember her name, but that was especially tough on me because my kids knew all these kids so closely. And it made
I remember some around graduation time. Like.
Yeah. And one graduation when somebody, had, I think, committed suicide.
Right.
And I remember how hard that was to deal with after that graduation. And I guess my talk at graduation, Mr. Palumbo came up to me afterwards and said, that's the best way. Nobody else could handle that,
right.
Bill. And he meant it. So I took that as a real. But, and that was also the time when the rain opened up at graduation.
Yeah. It just
and it
deluged.
Came down and poured. And this was one of the kids rushing like crazy. So nobody had a chance to really talk to anybody. And that was sad. That was sad. But the other ones that died were Leon Robinson died from histoplasmosis because he had gone up in the attic to deal with bats, and he caught the problem was caused by the bat.
Right.
Bat droppings.
And I remember him. He was a big imposing.
He was a massive man. He was a military guy. He was a fabulous man. He's a good teacher, industrial arts, and a good coach, track tape.
Yeah, he coached a few different, he coached some football too.
Yeah, and George Miller's death. And George Miller's death was actually unbelievable because George was such a good vice principal, and I didn't know what I would do. And I actually ended up hiring John Dwyer, Bob's father. He had a nickname then as the Hanging Judge.
Yeah,
Judge Dwyer. He came in to fill in as the vice principal. Did an absolutely excellent job. Fabulous job. And we still are in touch. Because he's part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Bob married.
Yeah, he married
Mary.
Mary, okay.
My daughter Mary. He's got good taste. Bob's a great guy, and Bob now provides us with English muffins the time.
Nice.
He's a fabulous cook, and he's every time he comes or Mary comes, we get about a dozen of his English muffins. Thank you, Bob. they're always good.
All right, one of the last questions is, what advice would you give someone who's just starting their I finally got my dream job, I'm going to be the principal of XYZ. What would you tell them, let me just give you a little bit of advice, what would it be?
Don't think you have all the answers. recognize you don't. Be humble, be consistent in what you want to accomplish. Know what you want to accomplish and go for it. Make sure your staff goes along with you. Don't tolerate any nonsense from anybody. Be loving. Recognize that the kids are the most important part of your job. Not you, not your administrators, not your guidance counselors, but you are in charge. And if you love your job and you love your kids, you'll be a success.
Awesome. I'm just going to like read a couple of things here. When I was doing the research for this, there was a picture of you. I don't know if it was in, it was one in one of the papers. I think it could have been when you were leaving something. They did an interview where you were, I don't know, but you had a bulletin board up behind you and there was stuff tacked up to it, sayings. These are a couple of the sayings. And you said, you know, don't think you have all the answers. One of the sayings you had tacked up there was, teach thy tongue to say, I do not know. And that is so true. I think part of our society is nobody ever wants to say, gee, I don't know the answer to that. I'll get back to you. Everybody's just too quick to be like, if they think they say, I don't know, it means, you know.
Let me give you some too on this. Mr. Palumbo and I didn't agree on what constitutes a neat office. He was very, very particular about what he did. And he would come in my office and he would say, Bill, why don't you clean up this messy office? So I found a poster and it stuck up on a bulletin board. And if a messy desk is a sign of a messy mind, what is an empty desk a sign of? And I put that in the middle of the poster, my board.
Yeah.
And Carl came in. He turned and he looked at it. He says, okay, I got the point. I got the point, Bill. But and Carl had a good sense of humor, too.
And then the other one that I was like, wow. You had one up there that says, teaching is the art of awakening the curiosity of young minds. You probably remember that.
They weren't mine. I know
it wasn't yours, but it was one that you thought enough to put up there. So yeah. Is there anything you want to say to, you know, this is your time. Just say anything you want to, you know, all the people that are going to listen to this and, you know, kind of a, like, you know.
Yeah, I think a little bit more reflection on Leon Robinson and the ones who died. They were so important to me. And what happened when Leon died, the Victor Choir sang. And it was one of the most beautiful services I ever saw. And then I've never forgotten it. Mm-hmm. And I have not been in contact with his wife or his child. And I wish them the best if they're, still alive.
His son is a Section 5 football referee.
Oh.
I do know that because he's been in touch with some Victor. He works with some Victor alums that do that also. And he's done quite well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got one of them. As you're turning 90, and you've probably been quite reflective with the family gathering this past week, and you've got a couple more days till your actual birthday, what would you tell your younger self if you knew now what... Back then, what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
Have faith in yourself. But you really do have to have faith in yourself. My life has been very influenced by my faith. And if I'm not saying that you can't have a good career without a faith, but I think it's very important to know yourself. And in getting married, if you marry somebody who has a totally different idea about faith, it'll be a lot more of a struggle to stay together. So find your faith and keep it strong. That's important. And I have a great belief in God and great belief in Christian church. I have great respect for those who are not Christian. I have a great respect for those who are atheists as well. They're all seeking their own path, and that's because the good Lord gives us free will to do that. So follow the free will that the Lord has given you, but make sure you don't offend him in the face, because he won't like that.
Well, again, I want to thank you for this time. It has been an absolute awesome trip with an absolute awesome person. And I know I'm speaking on behalf of every single, even the ones you had to come down on once in a while. I'm speaking on behalf of every single person that went to Victor during your tenure there as principal. We are so honored and thankful that you were the person shepherding us through those years. And
all you others out there, I can't tell you how much you meant to me.
Thank you.